facilities at the same time as the demonstration in New Mexico. Angelique felt a shock race along her nerves. A preemptive strike. To knock out their nuclear capabilities.
With their leaders in the same room with you? And the president?
Well, that's the beauty of it, Overmeyer said, breaking into a pleased smile. When the, accident happens, we can claim that it was an attack on us. Our preemptive strike will be seen as a justifiable counterblow.
It took Angelique a moment to digest what the Archbishop was proposing. But Your Eminence, she objected, the Chinese and Iranian leaders will both know that they didn't order a strike on the United States.
Waving a pudgy finger at her, Overmeyer gloated, Ah, yes, each one of them will know that he did not order a strike. But neither of them will know for certain that the other one didn't order it.
That's deceitful.
To prevent those heathens from starting a nuclear war, to protect the new morality and all that it stands for, a little deception is perfectly acceptable.
Angelique wanted to protest, but she saw that the Archbishop had made up his mind. Besides, she thought, if anything goes wrong, he can blame it all on the White House.
Overmeyer added, Melillo thinks we can present them with a fait accompli. We'll have nuclear weapons, and they'll have none. We can dictate our terms to them.
Terms? What terms? Angelique asked, her voice hollow.
Overmeyer's smile dimpled his flabby cheeks. Rounding up all the jihadists. The end of terrorism. Putting China in its place. Ensuring that America is supreme for the next 100 years or more.
Angelique's breath caught in her throat.
Think of it, the Archbishop said as he clasped his hands on the desktop. We will break the backs of our enemy with one blow. Crush them. We will begin the holy task of bringing all those heathens to Christ's loving mercy.
Chapter 11 The man made Angelique's blood run cold. She wanted to turn her face away from him. Focusing on his dossier, displayed on her desktop screen, she saw that his name was Nagash Janagar. He was a top-rated technician who had worked for most of his life in nuclear power plants in India and the United States. But as he stood before Angelique's desk, she thought he looked too frail and emaciated to carry out the vital task that needed to be done. Janagar was small, slight, his skin not dark so much as sallow, his rumpled shirt and shapeless slacks making him look bedraggled, as if he'd been hauled in by the police rather than coming to her office as a volunteer. It was his eyes that particularly troubled Angelique. Big, dark, sad eyes that stared at her almost without blinking. Desperate eyes. The eyes of a trapped animal, she thought. You understand that this is strictly a volunteer position, she said carefully from behind her desk. She almost felt as if she wanted to duck beneath it, use it as a protective barrier between herself and this gaunt, cheerless man.
I understand very well that I will become a holy martyr, said Janagar in rhythmically accented English. I understand completely, totally.
Angelique turned slightly in her swivel chair and studied Janagar's dossier on her screen. You're a convert to Christianity, she murmured.
Yes, indeed. After the bio-war wiped out my family, my wife and children, my entire village, I was rescued by a salvage team from the United States of America. They brought me to a hospital that was run by the New Morality. It was there that I saw the light of the true faith.
You remained in the United States?
I became a citizen. I married an American woman, although she was of Hindu parentage. I fathered 3 children by her, one of them a boy.
Angelique nodded. Before she could ask another question, though, Janagar continued.
You wonder why a happily married man seeks martyrdom, don't you? I will tell you. I have an inoperable brain tumor. My case is hopeless, the doctors tell me.
Without consciously willing it, Angelique thought of the old woman that she and Stoner had helped to escape from the hospital. She was a hopeless case, too. Hopeless because of the hospital staff's rules of triage and the New Morality's refusal to use secularist therapies. Stoner had saved her with banned, forbidden, sinful nanotechnology. Janagar went on. My life insurance policy is small, too small to pay for my son's education. But if my death is ruled an accident, the benefits to my family will be doubled.
Angelique stared into the man's tragic eyes. He's willing to die for his family, she thought. He's willing to give up his life to help his children.
In a voice that was barely above a whisper, she said,
So you are willing to die in this accident?
For the greater glory of God, Janagar said. He actually smiled, white teeth gleaming against his ashen skin.
Angelique nodded. For the greater glory of God, she thought.
Then she realized he's willing to commit murder to make life better for his children. A fragment of memory from her school days touched the surface of her mind. A quotation she'd read from some secularist writer who was on the list of prohibited books. But Angelique had smuggled a tattered, broken-spined old copy of one of his books into her convent room and read it by flashlight beneath her ragged, frayed blanket. A fanatic who is willing to die for his cause thinks nothing of killing you for his cause.
Chapter 12
This really was a tropical paradise once upon a time, said the Chinese physicist.
Tavalera nodded as he gazed out on the old harbor of Papeete. It was filled with magnificent yachts jammed along the piers, practically gunwale to gunwale. Tavalera thought he could walk from deck to deck completely across the harbor, all the way out across the channel to the graceful green cone of Moria, standing peacefully against the bright blue sky, its top wreathed in cloud. The Chinese physicist took in a deep, exaggerated breath, then grinned at Tavalera.
That's one thing they haven't changed, the climate. Not even the greenhouse warming has affected the climate here very much.
I guess, Tavalera muttered.
No flooding here, to speak of, the physicist went on. Not like Shanghai and Singapore. Tahiti is at a nodal point in the Pacific. The rise in sea level is barely noticeable here.
The physicist looked youthful, but Tavalera knew that to be invited to this international meeting he had to be a scientist of some stature, some achievement. He had met the man as he was checking into the hotel just after arriving on the island. They had fallen to talking and quickly agreed to take a walk around the town and its jam-packed harbor.
You're not a physicist, are you? The Chinese asked. His name was Quan Zeng, and he was from the University of New Shanghai. He was a millimeter or two taller than Tavalera, with long legs and long arms, and the kind of erect posture and slim torso that comes from dedicated daily exercise. His face looked almost European, despite the slight cast to his eyes.
How can you tell? Tavalera asked.
With a grin, Quan replied, You're not asking any questions.
Tavalera grinned back at him.
Neither are you.
That's because I'm giving you all the answers before you can ask.
They laughed together and decided to find the nearest bar. As they headed down the street that led away from the harbor, Tavalera realized that Quan was right. The one thing that hadn't changed about Papeete was the climate. Otherwise, the city had been completely altered. According to the histories Tavalera had scanned, Papeete had been a sleepy little town huddled around its harbor. Shops lined its main street, and the merchants who owned them lived behind their stores. But that was long ago. Now Papeete rose in concrete and steel, just like the rebuilt Honolulu and Singapore and every other waterfront, tourist-dependent city. Hotels and shopping malls, Tavalera saw, each one gaudier than the next. It made him feel depressed. Might as well be in Vegas, he said to himself. Then he added, But Vegas is a lot farther from the beach. Tavalera had only that first afternoon for sightseeing. He had dinner that evening with Angelique, who introduced him to a half-dozen of the bureaucrats she'd been working with to arrange this international conference. He sat there in almost total silence while they jabbered and chattered with each other, mostly in British-accented English, about seating arrangements and programming conflicts and scheduling the island's limited number of limousines to pick up the VIPs as they arrived at the airport. Once the dinner finally broke up and he headed for his room, Angelique got into the glass-walled elevator beside him. When will Stoner arrive? She asked, while the lobby atrium dropped away from them.
Tavalera shrugged. Who knows? He might be here already.
She looked surprised, almost alarmed.
He's not in contact.